Blog Talk Radio.
You guys know by now, horrific shooting just took place. I mentioned this on Twitter before, but I'll say it again right now. Not going to cover it in detail today because it just happened. Usually in the wake of shootings like this, there's a lot of bad information or, you know, misstated things. So we're going to hold off on reporting on this story until tomorrow. But I will tell you this today. It happened in Oregon, and it's the 45th school shooting this year. 45th. That's a stunning number. This is something that has to stop. It's got to stop. And there are policy solutions, not to stop every shooting, but to greatly limit the number of shootings and reduce the statistics overall. So, well, again, we'll get into more of that stuff. I guess tomorrow is, I fucking randomly don't know what day of the week it is. I think tomorrow is Friday, right? Yeah, no, so there's a show tomorrow. Yeah, so we'll talk about it tomorrow. Not going to be covering it in detail today. I'm sure if you turn on literally every other news outlet, they're going to be covering this all day today. So you guys can get your fix or your fill on that important news from today there. But tomorrow we'll do a more data-driven breakdown. We're not going to engage in the wild speculation that other media outlets like to engage in. All right, so let me give you a run-through of what you have to look forward to today. I guess in some ways this will be a little bit of a break from you hearing that very depressing news the rest of the day, but trust in the media. Basically an all-time low, or it's tied for an all-time low with last year. I'll give you some numbers on that. Gallup released an interesting report. We also finally have found Donald Trump's weakness. Now, I've alluded to this before when discussing Donald Trump, but now we have some. I have some specific numbers and some hard data as to what his weakness is. So he's still polling number one by a mile, but there's a caveat there, which is really, really important. Bernie Sanders is catching up to Hillary Clinton, not just in the polls, but also in fundraising. Now, don't worry, because he didn't, you know, sell out and go run to some big money donor and ask them for money. What did he do? He's Bernie Sanders. He went to the people, and he said, come on, you guys need to boost me up here. You know I'm fighting for you. Help me out. And it worked. So we'll talk about that. And then also Hillary Clinton with just a fucking hatchet to the heart of her campaign in terms of a story the media should cover nonstop to expose their true colors, but they won't do it. So it's a dagger in the heart or a hatchet in the heart. That's not really a hatchet in the heart, but we're going to discuss it in that context because everybody should be doing that. Then we got news coming out of Afghanistan and Syria. Bill O'Reilly puts on the curmudgeonly grandpa hat because he's Bill O'Reilly and he can't help himself. And don't ask me how. I'm not going to go into detail right now, but Justin Bieber made his way into the show. Taylor Swift made her way into the show. It's funny because just yesterday somebody was complimenting me like, you know what I like about your show? You never discuss celebrity bullshit. And I immediately responded with, well, I discuss celebrities and sex stories sometimes, but only when I think there's a bigger point to be made. Like I never just talk about them for the purpose of, mindless clicks on YouTube. I don't give a fuck about that. I think quality content will lead to more clicks. So it just so happens that today there's a story that, or a few stories I think are actually very interesting that bring up celebrities. So I failed this guy's test, possibly. All right, let's kick it off here with the trust in media poll. All right. There's a new Gallup poll out on trust in the mainstream media. And long story short, we're at historic lows. It's actually more accurate to say that we're tied for a historic low or an historic low with last year. So let me show you the first chart here, and then we'll break it down. So they started this in 1997, and 53% of people in 1997 said they have a great deal or a fair amount of trust in mass media, and specifically they're referring to newspapers, TV, and radio. But then as time went by there, you saw a gradual drop-off. And today we're at 40%. 2014 was 40%. And then obviously the further back you go there with some ebbs and flows, the number goes up the further back you go. So there's more and more distrust in media. Now there's a variety of reasons for that, and we can get into it. But I think that one of the more important reasons is the internet. You know, once the internet was created and once, you know, many people began to have access to it, there's basically this whole other outlet than you can go to where you can get your information from. And when you compare everything on the internet or some outlets on the internet versus just your traditional TV outlets, AM radio outlets, and the standard newspapers, well, yeah, you're going to get – the internet's going to start kicking your ass. Because TV sucks, AM radio sucks even worse than TV, and the newspapers actually do a pretty good job, but very few people read the newspapers. So overall, the mainstream media, mass media, is dropping in terms of how many people trust it, and there are other outlets where people are running towards. Now, of course, there's the caveat that if you ask them, hey, do you trust the internet, overall they might say no, but it gets complex because what outlets are you talking about? I mean, if you ask me, broadly speaking, do you trust the internet? I might say no, too. But that's because I'm, in my mind, when you say the internet, I'm trying to factor in everything on the internet, which is the best of the best and the worst of the worst. So do people find some specific outlets online that they like, and then that ends up replacing what they used to get from the mainstream media? I think the answer to that is yes. All right, so let's look at the next chart here. This one is super interesting. It's trust in mass media by age. So 18 to 49-year-olds, or in other words, more or less the key demographic there that advertisers care about, only 36% of them trust mass media or the mainstream media. When you get to 50 and older, the number kicks up, but it's still a pretty pathetic number. 45% of people 50 and older trust mass media. So, yet again, I hate to bring up the same theory, but I think it's true. Why is it that people age 18 to 49 now trust the mainstream media less? Well, they go somewhere else to get their information, namely specific places on the internet. All right, now, let me show you the last chart here. This is trust in mass media by party, and you see 55% of Democrats trust mainstream media, 33% of independents trust mainstream media, and 32% of Republicans trust mainstream media. So overall, those numbers are still pretty pathetic, but Republicans trust it the least. And I do find that ironic, I must say, because Republicans, when you look at the numbers for how much they trust Fox News, it's off the charts. So in reality, the Republicans do trust mass media. They trust probably the worst of all the different media companies, Fox News, to get their information from. And the Democrats, obviously, they take it from a variety of different channels when you look on TV. But overall, that number is still pretty sad when you look at the 55%. It shows that there's still a healthy dose of skepticism when you look at the mainstream media. Now, one reason for these numbers being pathetic, of course, the internet, like we laid out, but also just the inherent flaws in how the mainstream media functions. We've spoken about it before, but it bears mentioning again. In my opinion, I think there are three biases that the establishment media shows. The first one being the establishment bias. Now, it's not the same across the board. It varies from company to company. But for example, the establishment bias of MSNBC would be an establishment towards the Democratic Party. The establishment bias for Fox News would be a bias towards the Republican Party. The establishment bias for the rest of them, whether it's CNN or the different nightly news programs, their establishment bias is towards both parties. So they try to go easy on them and make sure that when you do a segment, you have one Republican and one Democrat and let them debate it, and you don't interject with your opinion. You let them have their say, and then you move along, which actually leads right into my next bias, the neutrality bias. The neutrality bias, and again, you see it less on Fox News and less on MSNBC because they have teams they're playing for, specific parties they're playing for, but on CNN and on the different nightly news programs, basically what they try to do is live in a fact-free world where everything's a matter of opinion and everybody's opinion is valid. So, again, you invite on guests. If you're debating climate change, as we've seen before, you bring on Bill Nye, the science guy, and you bring on Marsha Blackburn, a Republican congresswoman who doesn't know anything about science, and you have them debate, and then at the end of the segment, you don't say, okay, now let's fact-check it because that's our job. We're a news organization. No, you just leave it at that, and then you move along. And this is, unfortunately, how the mainstream media functions today. They start with an idea that a lot of people like in principle, which is this idea of equivalence. And then at the end of the day, what you really have is false equivalence ruling the airwaves because you're no longer fact-checking because facts can be divisive. And facts might make Republicans hate your network. So you got to try to keep that segment of the marketplace down too. So you do the vacuous talking points on both sides and you don't call anything for what it is. And then another important bias that they have, and the third one here, is the sensationalism bias, which is you're guaranteed to see, depending on which outlet you look at, but you're guaranteed to see, mixed in with stories that are somewhat serious, you'll have something about Kim Kardashian or you'll have something about different celebrities. And they do that because they care more about ratings than anything else. But in search of the ratings, ironically, they've actually hurt themselves because they've forgotten that quality begets ratings. Like, you're going to get the ratings if you do a really good job with your quality and you focus on that and that's your only focus. But they don't do that. You know, I don't want to bring up any specific names, but you guys know I know people in this business, and I've heard from people that there are many people on TV, so it sounds like I'm gossiping live on air, who, when they walk into their production meetings in the morning, they go, okay, how can we get more ratings? Not somebody who actually is obsessed with the news and wants to talk about it and is interested in it, where they go, oh my God, this story is incredible. I can't wait to break it down and describe it on air. Here are the facts. Let me go through this. No, they just come in every morning and say, okay, how do I get more ratings? Well, when that's your focus, you don't care about the substance anymore. You don't care about the quality anymore. All you care about is getting those zombie eyeballs on the screen. And how do you do that? Well, I mean, look, I turn into a zombie and I start staring. If you show Kim Kardashian's ass on screen, I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way. So maybe that's what a lot of these different media organizations are doing. Sprinkle in some stories like that along with serious stories, and then hopefully more people will watch. And then at the end of the day, what happens, though? Your product is going to self-destruct eventually, and your numbers are going to keep dropping because the only way you get eyeballs basically nowadays is by cheating. Another thing they do is they'll put up the breaking news banner when they shouldn't put up the breaking news banner. We did the story a while back. CNN put up breaking news, the Titanic sank 102 years ago today. I mean, that sounds like a joke, right? It sounds like I'm trying to do a stand-up act. No, they actually said that. They said that. Why? Because they learned that when we put up breaking news, we get a temporary bump in the ratings. So now they just abuse the fuck out of the breaking news banner. But then they wonder, why is it in the long run that we're actually bleeding viewers and they're running to the internet? Because you're cheating and they see right through it. Guys, the audience isn't dumb. The audience, they have brains. They see what you're doing. And they know that they would rather be watching quality, substantive programming that actually gives them news and information. Which is why, not to toot my own horn here, except that's exactly what I'm going to do, why we're becoming more popular, why other online outlets are becoming more popular, why Vice News is now fucking taking over the world. I mean, people see it and they go, oh, right, that's what news is supposed to be. That's what, you know, data-driven shows are supposed to be, and they're not doing that in the mainstream media anymore, and now the numbers are reflecting it as well. Okay, that was a longer segment than I thought it would be. Do I already have to go to Donald Trump? Fuck. I don't want to do it, but I got to do it. I'm not digging my outfit today, guys, I got to say. I look like a fucking... It's like bordering on an ironic suit. You know the ironic suits? Where you just purposely look like a jackass? I'm like bordering on that. I got a blue shirt on, but I got that shiny gray jacket, and I just fucking... It looks like I'm trying way too hard. I'm not digging it. You'll see it later. And then you can mock me in tweets. I'll greatly appreciate that. All right. So we finally found Donald Trump's weakness. Talking Points Memo is reporting on some mixed news about the Republican race. According to a new poll, quote, Trump led the field at 23% of likely voters expecting to vote in the GOP primaries nationwide, while Ben Carson and Carly Fiorina were tied at 13%. No establishment candidates cracked double digits, but Marco Rubio came close at 9%. They go on to explain that 18% of voters were undecided. So at this point, you might be thinking, well, how does that show Donald Trump's weakness? It says that he's leading. Wait for it. They continue here and say, with that in mind, it's worth noting that Trump also leads the group in lowest favorability rating at 27%, while 61% of those surveyed view the former reality television star unfavorably. Oh, okay. So, you see what's happening here? He's winning every debate by crushing numbers. He's winning in pretty much all the polls when you ask the standard questions. But when it comes to the issue of favorability, he's dead last. Now, what does that mean? See, and here's where interpretation comes in. I don't know what it means, to be honest. Is it possible that people in the Republican base say, I don't like him, but I'm going to vote for him because, yeah, oh, good management. I feel like we need a guy like that who people don't like in office now. Maybe. Or is it possible that when they get in that voting booth, they go, no, seriously, fuck that guy. I don't like that guy. Yeah, I said to the pollster X, Y, and Z, but fuck that guy. I'm not going to vote for him. What, are you kidding me? That's possible, too. So we simply don't know what's happening with Trump. And understand, no political pundit called this from the beginning, man. Nobody saw his trajectory from day one. I mean, a lot of people, rightfully, Tim said he's not a serious candidate and he's going to fizzle out immediately. Other people say, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? Some people say, oh, he's going to do well. But everybody was fucking guessing. I mean, my original prediction was that he would be like Newt Gingrich, which is, okay, you have your moment in the sun, you know, you're leading in all the polls, but then eventually, given enough time, you fizzle out like Newt did. But so far, he's already kind of outlasted Newt Gingrich in terms of amount of time that he's been leading. But then again, to be fair, Newt Gingrich had his moment later on in the process when primaries and caucuses were already going on. So it's a little bit different here. It's a little bit apples and oranges. But this is something to view as, okay, now it's getting serious. Now there's a little bit of a race going on. I mean, up to this point, all the fucking debate polls and things like that were just such an overwhelming Trump victory that you wouldn't be wrong to say, no, now he's the front runner. Now there's no question he's the leader in every way and he might win this thing. That was the rational thing to say. Now it's even more of a question mark because you're starting to see some serious things raised that show that he's not going to just cruise to victory like it looked like he was going to do for a while there. So we finally found one weakness. But then again, how big of a weakness is it? Because shouldn't everybody have already all along admitted, fuck that guy Donald Trump? I mean, he's such a fucking buffoon. All right. Now we go to Bernie Sanders. We go to the other end of the spectrum. Bernie Sanders is catching up to Hillary Clinton. Now, not only is he catching up in terms of the polls, but also with fundraising now, which is something that I don't think anybody would have guessed a little while ago. So Huffington Post reports on this, quote, Clinton raised $28 million between July and September of this year. That figure falls short of the $47.5 million she raised in the preceding 3 months, though it still puts her on track to reach her campaign's goal of $100 million for the year. Sanders is on track to raise over $25 million during the third quarter. Okay, so Hillary Clinton raised $28 million during this quarter. Sanders is on track to raise over $25 million during this quarter. So he's catching up in terms of fundraising. And guys, this is a big deal because remember, everybody in the establishment basically backs Hillary Clinton. Very few establishment people, if any, back Bernie Sanders. So how the fuck is he catching in the money primary? Well, let me continue here and maybe you'll get an idea. So they claim that overall, Bernie has now had over 1 million individual donors to his campaign. There's your answer right there. See, Hillary Clinton has to go to a small number of big money donors. Bernie Sanders has to go to a big number of small money donors. So Bernie actually goes to the people and says, hey, I'm representing you, so help a brother out with $20. And people go, yeah, sure. Whereas Hillary's, you know, in some back rooms in Wall Street saying, I'll do what you want, but you got to give me big money. In fact, let me give you some more information. Hillary had to do 60 fundraisers this quarter. 60 fundraisers. Bernie only did 7. So Bernie is out talking to the people. Hillary is doing fundraisers that are, you know, whatever they are, a couple $1,000s a plate with a bunch of rich assholes. So regular people just hear what Bernie's saying and then they donate. And Hillary and the rest of the establishment are definitely scared by this. And keep in mind, guys, Bernie is managing to do this with not very much help from the mainstream media. I mean, if you turn on the mainstream media, wall-to-wall Donald Trump coverage, wall-to-wall Donald Trump coverage, mixed in with a little bit of Hillary's email here and there. Are they talking about Bernie Sanders? Fuck no, they're not talking about Bernie Sanders. Once in a blue moon, maybe they talk about him. But they're not really focusing on his policies. They're not focusing on his message. So they're handicapping him. But even with the tremendous handicap, he's catching up. Guys, he's leading in the poll in New Hampshire. He's leading in the poll in Iowa by a lot. There are some polls that have him leading by double digits. And now, in the national poll, he's still behind. But he's closing the gap. And if we've learned anything up to this point, it's that Bernie knows how to really close those gaps. So who knows what's going to happen? I don't know what's going to happen. I don't want to give you guys the false impression here, the misimpression that, oh, Bernie's definitely going to win. No, we don't know that. And it's a lot of hard work to get to that point, and good people have to stand up and work hard right along with him. So in reality, it's on us. It's on the middle class. It's on the poor. It's on everybody who wants a better country to listen to Bernie Sanders and help out Bernie Sanders, because we know once he's in office, he's going to do his part for us, but we need to be right there with him. And to fight back against the media and to fight back against the establishment and the moneyed interests, oh boy, is that a hard battle to win. We can win it. I'm not saying we're going to for sure. We can win it, but we have to keep fighting. Let's take a break. When we come back, the International Business Times really, 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 really put a hatchet into Hillary. One of the things that she was openly musing about in terms of the Iraq war, in my opinion, is just unforgivable. I mean, I already don't forgive the vote, but this is like, it proves a lot of the things that people who were dismissed as fringe were saying in the middle of the Bush years. You know, oh, the war's about oil, the war's about, you know, multinational corporations, yeah. That actually, it turns out, even according to Hillary Clinton, is totally true, and you'll see what I mean, internal emails that really expose that. And then also we'll move along here and talk about the anti-Russian fear-mongering, which has been kicked into overdrive, which we're going to beat back that propaganda because it's so pathetic and so untrue. And then later on, Sean Hannity, Bill O'Reilly, we got some anti-Muslim fear-mongering, and we got some curmudgeonly grandpa arguments coming out of Bill O'Reilly, which basically means it's a day that ends in Y. But these ones were, I don't know why, but I thought that these ones were an extra layer of funny. He's so ridiculous. He calls the internet, and he calls cell phones, and he calls laptops. I'm sure you guys have heard this before, but he calls it the machines. And he's like still at that level of like it's just bad, like technology bad. The machines are taking over. All right, so we'll talk about that and much more, guys. Stay right there. We'll be right back. The Eminem song reminded me of, there was this like meme back in like, I don't know, maybe it was 2005 or so, and it was like, the best golfer in the world is black, the best rapper in the world is white, the best basketball player in the world is Chinese. That one's referring to Yao Ming. So don't judge a book by its cover, or something like that, something to that effect. I always thought that was clever. Or maybe I'm just a dork and I'm the only one who thought that was clever. All right. I got more Hillary Clinton here. And huge story, huge story, huge story. See where else you hear this story today. Allow me to answer it. Nowhere. Absolutely nowhere else will you hear this. I don't even think other new media outlets will cover this. All right. The International Business Times is reporting on a story that's a devastating blow to Hillary Clinton. They say the following, quote, "When Hillary voted to authorize the war in Iraq in 2002, she justified her support of the invasion as a way to protect America's national security. But less than a decade later, as Secretary of State, Clinton promoted the war-torn country as a place where American corporations could make big money. Quote, it's time for the United States to start thinking of Iraq as a business opportunity," she said in a 2011 speech. The quote was included in an email released by the State Department on Wednesday that specifically mentioned J.P. Morgan and ExxonMobil. J.P. Morgan was selected by the U.S. government to run a key import-export bank in Iraq, and in 2013 announced plans to expand its operation in the country. ExxonMobil signed a deal to redevelop Iraqi oil fields. J.P. Morgan has collectively paid the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation at least $450,000 for speeches, and ExxonMobil has donated over $1 million to the family's foundation. A Clinton, Tom Nides, hosted an event, quote, "on investing in Iraq with senior executives from 30 U.S. companies and senior representatives from the U.S. and Iraqi governments." Oh boy. So in other words, the main thing that you fear about the Clinton family is true, and that is that they are the epitome of an establishment elitist family. They have connections in government, they have connections in business, and they're working tirelessly to connect the two and be involved in the circle jerk of cash and power. No, guys, this is incredible. See, what this proves is that the stuff that everybody was saying right in the middle of the Bush years about how, well, the war is really about oil and natural resources and imperialism and multinational corporations, all that is totally true. And here you have an establishment Democrat saying, of course that's true, and I'm even taking part in it. I'm calling my buddies at J.P. Morgan and ExxonMobil and saying, yeah, we illegally invaded a country. We waged an offensive war. But you guys, look at this as a business opportunity, man. I mean, this is criminal shit. This is the height of immorality. This is as unethical as it gets. And then, of course, you see exactly why that is, because they got $450,000 for speeches just from those two corporations, J.P. Morgan and ExxonMobil. Oh, I'm sorry, one of them was $450,000, and the other one gave $1 million to the foundation. No, this is inexcusable, and can't have this person as president. You can't have this person be in any position of power. This is the kind of corruption, this is the kind of bribery that liberals and progressives rail against on a daily basis. And guess what? It's not just the Republicans doing it. Don't get me wrong, they are doing it, and they're doing it virtually across the board. But the establishment Democrats are just as bad on this issue. Now, don't get me wrong, Hillary Clinton on some of the social issues is better, kind of. There's a new email that came out how she hated the idea of changing mother and father on certificates to parent one and parent two for gay people. So she's somewhat better on social issues. But in terms of economics, and in terms of will she look out for the middle class and the poor and crack down on the rich? No, absolutely not. I mean, moral character is standing up and saying, when you saw the debacle of the war in Iraq going on, this is horrible. There's no rational justification for this. This isn't for self-defense. This isn't for national security. We are the aggressor. Look at all the civilians we're killing. Let's get out of there. But the thing is, even when we learned that all the reasons and the rationalizations and the justifications for the war are bullshit, that's not what Clinton was doing. Clinton was sending emails to her buddies in big business going, let's get rich off this. This is a deeply immoral person. This is a person who's not going to question the system. This is a person who's not going to change the system. This is a person who is the epitome of the system. This is somebody who is deeply corrupt, deeply unethical, deeply immoral, and in no way, shape, or form should represent the Democratic Party. I mean, we're the people that have the base that actually cares about rational priorities. We actually care about the middle class and the poor. We care about not fighting ridiculous wars. And what, we're going to pick Hillary Clinton to lead us and lead the country after this? When she's basically telling us, hey, I'm part of the neocon circle jerk. I'm with them. Okay, wage the offensive war, and then we'll get rich off of it. Military-industrial complex all day long. I love the military-industrial complex. So not only do you recognize it and not do anything about it, as some shitty establishment Democrats do, you're actually participating in it. You like it. You like it. If your choices are this and somebody like Bernie Sanders, who's consistently opposed every war, it's not even really a choice. It's beyond obvious who you should pick. Guys, I don't think people really understand just how big of a deal that is. Everybody in America should have been outraged. The second we knew for sure that, hey, all the reasons for this war were bullshit, and we just did an offensive war, we just did an invasion of a country, and hundreds of thousands of civilians are dying. And it's the right thing to do. Only a normal person gets outraged over that and says, enough, enough, let's get out. Not only was she cool with it, she was on the team of the neocons, talking behind the scenes about making money off of this. That's fucking crazy. And of course, it comes down to personal enrichment. And it comes down to, you know, doing the bidding of the establishment, whom she represents perfectly. I mean, ever since that article came out, you have to know about Hillary Clinton. Ever since that article came out that said the Wall Street guys allow her leeway against them. Like, with Obama, for example, they hated when Obama would speak out against Wall Street. They hated it. They hated it. Now, Obama would speak out against them and kind of do their bidding, oftentimes, but they still hated it when he did it because they didn't trust him that much. They trust Hillary so much that they allow her to speak out against them. They say, go ahead, do whatever populist rhetoric you need to do because we know you're actually on our team. So say whatever you have to say. Say you want to tax us at 90%. We don't give a shit. We know you don't mean it. This is Hillary Clinton. All right, now. God, I got more war stuff. I'm depressing you. I mean, you thought, or I thought too, that this was going to be a little getaway for you from the horrible mass shooting today, which we will be covering tomorrow. But no, it's still pretty depressing. All right. The Associated Press is reporting that we might stay in Afghanistan even longer. Quote, in a potential major shift in policy, U.S. military commanders want to keep at least a few thousand American troops in Afghanistan beyond 2016, citing a fragile security situation highlighted by the Taliban's capture of the northern city of Kunduz this week, as well as recent militant inroads in the south. Keeping any substantial number of troops in Afghanistan beyond next year would mark a sharp departure from President Obama's existing plan, which would leave only an embassy-based security cooperation presence of about 1,000 military personnel by the end of next year. About 9,800 U.S. troops are in Afghanistan right now. So the current plans that they're drawing up would keep a similar number of troops there. Now understand, guys, since we've been doing this show on a daily basis, Secular Talk, I think every 5 months or so we come out with another story where we say, okay, they drew the line here, so we're going to be out in 2015 for sure now. And then we have to come out like a month later and say, actually, they just backtracked on that and said we're going to stay there longer. And then we come out again and say, all right, they say now we're totally going to be out by this date. And then we come out again a little after that and we say, no, actually, they backtracked on that and they said we need to stay there longer now. And this is like the third or fourth time that we're doing it, where now they're saying, did we say leave by then? I mean, you know it's a fragile security situation, we probably have to say. Yeah, it's a fragile security situation because it's fucking Afghanistan. It's never going to not be a fragile security situation. What don't you get about that? As I said the other day, the idea that, okay, so the Taliban took this important city. Now, they recently got it back. Afghanistan troops got it back. But the idea that, well, we need to stay there to make sure that doesn't happen. You know how long we'll be putting off the Taliban from taking it over again? However longer we stay. So, okay, stay there another 10 years and waste billions more U.S. tax dollars that we don't want to spend. And then what happens? 10 years from now, when we pull out, they'll fucking take it over again. And then what are we going to do? Well, it's a fragile situation. Got to go back in. You're making an argument for endless war. Now, understand, we live in a constitutional republic and a representative democracy. When we talk about something like war, shouldn't the politicians give a shit what the American people have to say because they're funding that war with our goddamn money? Now, we say clearly, we don't want you over there anymore. We just don't. I mean, a poll came out maybe a year ago now or a year and a half ago, which found that Afghanistan is more unpopular now than Vietnam was at the height of its unpopularity. Vietnam was a historic blunder, a terrible failure, and people hated that war. Now Afghanistan is more unpopular. And what does this liberal Democrat do? He's like, we might need to stay there longer. My commanders are saying that we should stay. Yeah, the commanders are always going to fucking say that. That's their job. I love it when people use that as like, you know, some they think it's some sort of convincing argument. You know, the military personnel say that there's a military solution. Yet no fucking shit. They're in the military. What do you expect them to say? That's exactly what they've always said. They said that in Vietnam. They said that in Vietnam. Even after Lyndon B. Johnson increased troops, there was no progression. Increased more troops, there was no progression. Then the military people say, no, just keep increasing it. That's, of course, they're going to say it. They always say that. They've never not fucking said that. They always say that. But here we go, man. Under a supposed liberal Democrat in office in his administration, they're like, move the goalposts again. Move the goalposts again. Move the goalposts again. Move the goalposts again. Why? 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 Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that, hey, when we withdraw, Afghanistan turns into a utopia. Of course not. Are you listening to what I'm fucking saying? I'm saying even if it does go to shit, it's still none of our business because we accomplished the mission that you originally said was the fucking mission. Remember, the idea was, well, the Taliban is giving refuge to Al-Qaeda. They're looking after them. So we said, fuck that after 9/11. We're going to go in there and we're going to fuck up Al-Qaeda. You know what we did? We went in there and we fucked up Al-Qaeda. According to the CIA, they say today less than 100 Al-Qaeda members are in Afghanistan. So mission accomplished. Where's the debate? It's over. We crushed Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. Wash your hands. Let's go home. What's happening here? But then they just moved the goalposts. Well, I mean, while we're here, fuck the Taliban too. Yeah, but wait a second. The Taliban is a guerrilla army. They want to have control. They have regional aspirations, not global caliphate aspirations. Al-Qaeda had global caliphate aspirations, which is why after they attacked us, we needed to kick their fucking ass. The Taliban is not, they're not coming for Idaho, dipshit. So, but stay there and fight them anyway, because we don't like them. And then what? Well, then we'll beat them back. And then what? Then we'll withdraw, and then the Taliban will take over again. And then what? Well, we got to go back in. Again, endless war. You just want endless war. We don't want endless war. So, the main takeaway from this is the solution is not the thing that you've been doing all along, which hasn't worked. Perhaps, since we already achieved our original goal, there's no reason to be there anymore, unless it's about something else. And of course, it is about other things. With the rest of our military interventions, it's always about other things as well. It's about the military-industrial complex. It's about making money. It's about the fact that opium is in Afghanistan, minerals are in Afghanistan, oil is in Iraq. We want more geopolitical power. We want to continue to be the leader in the world, the number one imperialist country. All these things factor into the decision-making. It's not about keeping you safe, because in reality, they're making you less safe. And I'll leave you with this. Glenn Greenwald had a great article about this and some other things, where he says, or the title of the article, I should say, is, U.S. bombs somehow keep falling in places where Obama ended two wars. You don't get to have it both ways. Either really end the wars and stop the interventions and come back, which is what I want you to do and the American people want you to do. Either do that or do the wars and say you're doing the fucking wars. Can't say, I'm a man of peace as I bomb you and I keep doing interventions. But that doesn't make sense. That's a contradiction. And we are officially in the world of Orwell when you start talking like that. How does President Obama define endless peace, perpetual peace, endless war, and perpetual war. All right. Next. One more foreign policy, and then we'll get into some lighter stuff, like Bill O'Reilly being a grandpa. This one, Syria. Really going all over the Middle East today, huh? The anti-Russian fear-mongering has been kicked into overdrive by the U.S. government and by the media, because Russia started doing some airstrikes against ISIS in Syria. So CNN reports, quote, Senator John McCain on Thursday said Russia's initial airstrikes in Syria targeted recruits in the Free Syrian Army rebel group backed by the United States. Quote, I can absolutely confirm to you that there were strikes against our Free Syrian Army recruits that have been armed and trained by the CIA because we have communications with people there. All right, now, this is being used to paint Russia as escalating a conflict against the U.S. Now, in reality, that's not happening. Russia is allies with Syria. They've been allies with Syria for a very long time, and they back the Assad regime. They're open about the fact that they back the Assad regime, and they're fighting the rebels who are fighting Assad. In reality, it's got very little to do with the United States of America, but all the morons in Washington love to bring back that Cold War dynamic. Now, don't get me wrong. Has Putin been wrong and aggressive in other ways? Yes. The situation in Crimea, that's a complex situation, and we don't have time to get into all that. But that's where, okay, you know, something's going on here. There is a dynamic between the West and Russia, and how do we deal with it, so on and so forth. But here, this is just, no, he's backing his ally. He's open about the fact he's backing his ally. It's got nothing to do with the U.S., but we make it about us, and we try to paint it as, oh, Russia is being aggressive, and oh, Russia may be violating international law. These are things that have been, there have been articles about this over the past 2 days, which I find fucking hilarious, because the government is saying this stuff and leaking it to the media, but the U.S. government now, all of a sudden, is so concerned about international law. Are you kidding me? We violate it on a daily basis, virtually. So it's just clownish. But here is what the media isn't telling you. So if you look at the headlines, a lot of them yesterday were, Russia strikes rebels in Syria that aren't ISIS. Woo! Well, another one was, Putin orders U.S. planes out of Syria. Again, trying to set up the dynamic of us versus Russia and the Cold War narrative. Now, what's the reality? Well, Vice News reported 2 days ago, quote, U.S. Central Command admits U.S.-trained Syrian rebels gave a bunch of supplies to al-Qaeda affiliate. So when they say, he's not attacking ISIS, he's attacking other rebels. Why are you not completing that sentence? Who are the other rebels? The other rebels are jihadists. The other rebels are al-Nusra. The other rebels are people you should be fucking fighting too. But no, you armed them. You armed the rebels. And then they went and gave all the weapons to al-Qaeda and they fucking fought side by side with them because they're all jihadists. So when they try to paint it like, you know, oh my God, Russia's bombing women and children. It's so fun. But they're not. They're not doing that. They're attacking the people who are al-Nusra and al-Qaeda and ISIS and who are fighting the Assad regime. So you simply set up a false dynamic here, and you're the one that's being aggressive. Because remember, all of these articles that are being written now are leaked by the U.S. government, and they're trying to paint it like, ooh, big, bad, scary Russia being more militaristic and getting involved in this country. Why are they getting involved in this country? Oh, look, they're not even killing ISIS. Now they're killing other people in Syria. Aren't they such bad guys? Russia, they have their problems, and they're bad guys in other ways. Not for fucking bombing al-Nusra are they bad guys. No, I fucking applaud them. I say, you keep doing that. You keep bombing them. I want you to keep bombing them. It's basically doing the dirty work that we should be doing. We should be attacking the people, unfortunately, that we're allies with right now. So this isn't wrong. This isn't bad. Russia pisses me off in a thousand ways. This is not one of the ways that they're pissing me off. And for the U.S. government and the U.S. media to escalate some sort of a feud over this, it's not only dumb, it's actually dangerous, too. Because this is how, you know, you blundered your way into further conflicts and further problems by making something out of nothing. He's attacking jihadists, and you're like, well, they're not ISIS, so he shouldn't attack them. No, he should fucking attack them, and you need to sit down and shut the fuck up, because you're not helping, you're indeed making the situation worse. And we'll do one more before we take our final break. This one is Bill O'Reilly. Where is that clip? I hope he says the machines in this one. I don't know if he actually says it, but he said it at one point during the rant. I just don't know if it's in the clip. Bill O'Reilly went on an awesome grandpa-like rant about the state of American politics. Let's check it out.
A new NBC News poll asked, do you think things in the nation are generally headed in the right or wrong direction? A whopping 62% said wrong direction. Only 30% believe the USA is headed in the right direction. 5% are mixed up or something. Now, I believe the poll is accurate because the economy is soft, earnings are stagnant, foreign policy is the worst I've ever seen, ever. But in the same poll, Vice President Biden was matched up against all the Republican contenders for president. And Biden wins each time. The vice president, 48%, Jeb Bush, 40%. Biden, 47%, Carly Fiorina, 41%. Biden, 49%, Dr. Carson, 41%. Biden, 56%, Donald Trump, 35%. The Veep isn't even running yet, but he soon will be, and this poll may nudge him. But how can these results happen when two-thirds of the country believe the country is in trouble? Biden's the vice president. He endorses pretty much everything Barack Obama does. So why would you vote for him? Talking Points believes the answer to that question is kind of cruel. Many Americans are simply dumb. They don't know what's going on. They don't pay attention. They don't care. They'll question the machines that allow the individual American to create his or her own world. You don't have to live in the real world anymore. Used to be drugs and alcohol obliterated reality. Now, it's your handheld or your PC.
Well, that's just embarrassing. He's such a grandpa. He's such a grandpa. You know, like in my day, kids would do drugs and drink the alcohol. It would ruin their life. It would ruin their life. And now the kids are all using the machines. I don't like the machines. You ever see that movie Terminator with Skynet? They ended up taking over the world. Now they got machines. They got phones. They got the internets and the interwebs and the computers. You don't even need to plug it in anymore. You put it on your lap and it's a laptop computer. I don't like those things. It's foreign to me and I don't understand it, so I don't like it. Same with the blacks and the Hispanics. The mindset is, I don't fully understand it, so I'm against it. It's almost classic bigotry, and it's a bigoted mindset of, I'm against it because you don't know enough about it, you're not immersed in it, you're not part of the culture, so, you know, it's like, well, fuck that. I mean, look, I'm not a big fan of techno, but am I gonna disparage people who like techno because it's not necessarily my thing? No, I'm sure if I spend enough time, I'm immersed in the culture, I'll get to see, oh, this is why you like it. That's why, like, oh, we all did Molly. Well, now I'm feeling good, too. Maybe I like this techno thing. But he can't entertain it. He's just an old curmudgeonly prick. The machines are bad. Man, drugs and alcohol are bad. The machines are bad. That's what it's like now. Bill, do you understand that these fucking machines you're talking about, that the Google is part of it, and you could look up basically anything ever in the world and get information instantaneously at your fingertips? Is that not a positive side of the machines? Is it not a positive thing that I can pick up the phone or text somebody in Dusseldorf and go back and forth with them in real time? Is that not a good thing? I want to go back to the days of the telephone that you got to do the thing with the circles. That's what I like. That's what we did back in my day. God, he's such a jackass. Everything is, you know, what was I raised with? What was my culture like? Well, now it's all going downhill because I'm not used to it, so I don't like it. Oh, my God. How do you not see that you are the definition of the curmudgeonly grandpa? And then his conclusion, based on the fact that 62% of Americans say the country's going on the wrong track, but they'd still vote for Biden over Republicans, he's like, they're dumb. They must be dumb. They must be dumb. Or the Republicans, they've rightly identified, are all worse than Joe Biden. Maybe they don't necessarily like Joe Biden, but the Republicans are worse. They're correct in that analysis. They're not dumb. You're the one that's flirting with dumb. And also, if you want to talk about dumb, let's talk about dumb. A poll just came out this week. 80% of Republicans said George W. Bush was a good president. They said, in the poll, they said, a majority of Republicans today would give George Bush a third term. The guy who put two wars on the credit card, one of the wars was an offensive war against the wrong fucking country, had the biggest terrorist attack on American soil ever under his administration, and crashed the goddamn economy and blew up the debt and the deficit, was a failure according to every objective measure, even the ones the Republicans like to use. They said that guy, I'd vote for him again. Who's stupid again, Bill O'Reilly? Let's talk about stupid. Let's talk about stupid. Who's stupid? Is it 80% of the Republican Party, or is it the people who say that Biden's better than Republicans? Oh, I think we all know the answer to that question, except you. What a clown. Again, man, see, at face value, that might look like a contradiction, right? Well, 62% like Biden or whatever, but, or I'm sorry, 62% say the country's going down the wrong track, but they'd all vote for Biden over Republicans. Right, the logical takeaway from that is not, oh my God, Biden is fantastic. It's the Republicans are just a total lost cause because they're an incredibly extreme political party, and people are holding their nose and saying, of course, between those two, I pick Biden over them. It's amazing how he can be so incredibly off base in every point that he makes, but he has this smug aura to him, like, I'm the only one who knows what I'm talking about, and you guys, I mean, you're all dumb. That's what you are. All right, let's take a break, and when we come back, Sean Hannity is going to do some ambitious fear-mongering, I call it, and then we'll get to Rick Santorum, and later on, as promised, fucking Justin Bieber and Taylor Swift are in the show, but don't worry, they're actually kind of interesting stories. All right, stay right there. Back, guys. Have I mentioned that I hate my outfit set? I think I have. I look like... What do I look like? I look like a gay accountant. That's what this outfit looks like. I got a blue shirt. I already went through this. Blue shirt and shiny fucking green, gray jacket. If any one of you tells me that it looks good, you're just fucking lying. I've already convinced myself of that. All right, Sean Hannity and some fear-mongering. Fun. Sean Hannity is going to do some fear-mongering over the Iran nuke deal. Let's listen.
That's what I don't get. Even here in this country, Islam does nothing to police themselves.
Okay, but it's either... They silently agree with the radical interpretation, but they themselves won't join in, or they're fearful. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, and I truly believe that probably a vast majority are afraid to take on the hijacking of their religion. But this is so widespread. For example, it's not far-fetched, is it, to imagine a scenario where the Iranians get their nuclear weapon, thanks to Obama, and that they align with ISIS, and that they... In the meantime, they're building ICBM missiles, and that they launch one at Israel, they launch one at the United States of America, and that, you know, we lost over 100 million human souls in the last century, that we could lose 200 million in this century.
Unbelievable. All you have to do is make up a scenario, pose it as a, well, maybe this will happen, and then just watch the results. Your audience is already... panicky as fuck, Sean. Then they hear this, oh, God damn it, I better get 8 more guns. He's like, well, you know, 200 million people might die from an Iran nuke attack against us, against Israel. I mean, I'm just saying, just throwing it out there. It's a big problem. We might want to look into that. Whoa. But let's nip this right in the bud here. Your first point is wrong when you're like, well, Iran's going to get nukes now thanks to Obama. Already wrong. Let's move along. Next topic. What's wrong with you? Again, for anybody out there who's still against the Iran nuke deal, I'm begging you. I'm pleading you. Just read the deal. Just read the deal. Don't read what your favorite news outlet said about the deal. Don't read an opinion piece on the deal. Don't read an article on the deal that lays out bullet points as to what's in the deal and then does some conjecture. None of that. Go directly to the deal. It's available online and read the fucking deal. And then tell me that you would not sign on to that deal, because if you say that, then you're simply an unreasonable person. Or like a lot of the Republicans, Louie Gohmert, Duncan Hunter, you just want war. You want a military conflict. So you're any diplomacy, by definition, you're against, no matter how good the deal is, because that you just don't like diplomacy. So... you're wrong from point number one. But furthermore, I don't know if you guys caught it there in the middle. He said it's not hard to imagine Iran working with ISIS to nuke America and Israel. We already just described how they're indeed not getting a nuke. The opposite is happening. But you just said Iran is going to work with ISIS? Hey, fuckhead. Iran is fighting ISIS. Virtually everybody who's, you know, a Republican politician or a Republican media figure, they don't know anything about the Middle East. They don't know anything about the conflict. They don't know the difference between Sunni and Shia. They don't know who is Sunni. They don't know who is Shia. Iran is going to work with ISIS. So Iran is going to work with the people who want to kill all them. ISIS is Salafist. They're ultra-conservative Sunni fundamentalist. Iran is Shia. The Sunni fundamentalists want to wipe out the Shias before they even get to the Americans and the evil Westerners. Probably number one on their list is the Shias and the evil Jews. That's how they view it. But they're like, no, they're going to work together. Really? Then why are they number one on their enemy list? Why are they fucking fighting right now? Right now they're fighting. No, but again, it all goes back to, in Sean Hannity's mind, it's not made for nuance. It's made for good guy, bad guy. They bad, we good. And bad guy going to team up, try to hurt the good guy. We got to hurt them back. And once you set up that dynamic of, like, us versus them completely, well, then you're the one that usually ends up being the aggressor, as you claim the entire time to be the victim. This is exactly the narrative that happened with Iraq. Think about it. They said, oh, my God, Saddam had something to do with 9/11. He didn't. Saddam has weapons of mass destruction. He's going to launch them. No, he didn't have them. No, he's not going to launch them. So we're the victim. We're the victim. We're the victim. Attack! Attack! And then we do the offensive war. We stay there. We end up killing over 200,000 civilians. So the entire time, and this is exactly the narrative he's setting up, they're so bad, they're so bad, they're so bad, they're going to, Iran and ISIS are going to team up, even though they're fighting each other, and they never team up, and they're going to attack us in Israel. They're so bad, they're so bad, they're so bad, we're the victim, we're the victim, we're the victim, attack, attack. Always use your mind. I hate to pull a Donald Trump here. Brain. We need brain in this country. Use your mind and evaluate the evidence and learn what's actually happening before you make ridiculous policy decisions and argue stupid points like maybe 200 million people will be annihilated in a nuclear war because of evil Iran and evil ISIS. All right. All right, let's go to Rick Santorum. How many segments have we done in the past year of Republicans that do not know the difference between Sunni and Shia? At least three, right? I mean, I could think of Donald Trump. We had to do that one recently. I think he didn't know the difference between Sunni and Shia, but we know he didn't know the difference between Hamas and Hezbollah. There were a bunch, right? There was another Republican politician recently. At least three times we did stories where Republicans do not know the difference between Sunni and Shia. How pathetic is that? You want to talk about Middle East issues and you don't even understand that? How the fuck are those guys supposed to understand more important points, too, or equally important points about the U.S. intervention in the region, like in Iran in 1953 when we overthrew their government and put in the Shah and got rid of Mohammad Mossadegh? And there's no way they're going to understand, you know, the complexity of why the region is fucked up. I mean, it's a mix of reasons, and we all know that it is nuanced. But these guys aren't going to understand that. They don't even understand the fucking Sunni and Shia. They don't even get that Iran and ISIS would never work together. Never work together. Sunni and Shia are fighting in Yemen. Sunni and Shia are fighting in Syria. This divide is so strong, and they don't know it. They just don't know it. They don't know it. They don't see it. Iraq, too, obviously. Sunni versus Shia. Rick Santorum, sorry, I got sidetracked again with a side rant there. Rick Santorum went on the Daystar program, or I should say the Daystar Network, I guess. It's a show called Marcus and Joni, and he defended anti-gay bigot Kim Davis in the worst possible way.
morphed into a country that sees the Supreme Court as the lawgiver now. These people who are unaccountable and unelected are the ones that we have to just follow on. And you know, I always say that if you accept the fact that whatever the Supreme Court says is the law, then you have to go back to the Nuremberg trials. What was the defense of all the people at Nuremberg when they were following? They said, "Well, we were just following the law. That was the law, and so listen, we're not to blame for it. We're following the law. If the law is unjust, then it is incumbent upon people to stand up and have the courage to fight that law."
Nuremberg. You brought up Nuremberg. So gay marriage is like Nazi war crimes. Okay, to everybody on the right, I need you to understand this. Not all objectors are created equal. I mean, that should go without saying, but clearly we need to say it. And he goes on there, he brings up the classic slavery again. He's like, you know, if the authority is always right, then why was it that one time the authority said that slavery was right? Well, these are different things. In the case of objecting against slavery, what you're doing is you are against discrimination. You are against intolerance. With the Kim Davis thing, she's the one that's for discrimination. She's the one that's for intolerance. So the real apt analogy in what you're talking about is if somebody, 5 years ago, gay marriage is illegal, and they say, well, I'm going to give a gay marriage license anyway because I'm going to be an objector to the system which is screwed up. I'm going to side against discrimination. I'm going to side against intolerance. I'm going to be on the side of equality, and I'm going to give them a marriage license. That's an objector that's good and doing the right thing. It's amazing that they've found a way to twist the narrative to make it so that they are always the good guy. They're always on the right side. So I keep bringing up this tweet, but it was fantastic. Somebody said, Kim Davis thinks she's Rosa Parks, but in reality, she's the old white woman on the front of the bus screaming at Rosa Parks to get to the back of the bus. And the entire time, like, chest puffed out, I'm a hero! My moral compass, I couldn't take it! I needed to do what's right by God! Man's law is irrelevant, God's law is right! Do you not get that in order to be an objector that's making sense, your argument can't simply be, Bible! God! Me no like the gays! That's not a good argument. Again, that puts you on the side of bigotry. When people stand up against slavery, what they're saying is, hey, I believe in treating people in a kind way, being fair, believing in equality, believing in justice, and I'm going to fight on the side of more freedom. Kim Davis, you think you're the hero. You're standing up against freedom, standing up to continue to be tyrannical. You want to tell gay people what they can and can't do when they're consenting adults. That doesn't make you a hero. That makes you the villain. Everybody else seems to recognize it, but you, Rick Santorum, Mike Huckabee, and a few other idiots. Okay. Jeez, I'm fucking cruising here, man. Yet again, we might finish a tad early today. Hey, I like them apples. All right. The Duggar family has a pastor who has an interesting theory about sex that he wants to share with you. Now, usually when we talk about the Duggars and we talk about sex, there's hookers involved, porn stars, things like that. This time, it's a little bit different. A Minnesota pastor whose teachings have been promoted by members of the Duggar family argued this week that sex is only for Christians. This is serious. The guy wrote an article on it. His name is Pastor John Piper. His article is titled, Sex Belongs to Christians. Very straightforward. And here's his argument, quote, Sex belongs to Christians because sex belongs to God. Let's pause. Already, like, what does that mean? I don't know what you're saying. Sex belongs to Christians. I know that's what you think, but you're just making a declaration. You're not providing the argument yet. Well, that's because sex belongs to God. I don't know what that means. What does that mean? Your God? The one that is your particular set of myths and fairy tales? Or is the God of, is it Buddha? The God of Buddhism? What are we talking about here? Are we talking about Hinduism? Are we talking about Shinto? Are we talking about, I know some of these don't have gods, by the way. You go down the list. We're talking about pagans. Are we talking about Islam? What are we talking about? Sex belongs to God. In order for that statement to be true, wouldn't you need to demonstrate, as a matter of fact, that God does exist? And there'd have to be some matter of historical record where you say, no, God does own sex. See, he has a patent. He's waving it in the air. No, he's the one that created it. See, he's proving that he created it. It's just, I find people hilarious when they don't bother to, like, build up arguments based on evidence and reason and then come to a conclusion. They just make claims. Sex belongs to Christians. What does that fucking mean? It doesn't mean anything. You're saying words, but there's no substance attached to them. Sex belongs to God. Does that mean God's fucking nonstop? Is he banging Marilyn Monroe right now? How does this work? How does this work? All right, now let me continue. I like how I got two lines in and already lost my shit. He says, if it is used by those who do not believe and know the truth, it is prostituted. The pleasures of sex are meant for believers. They are designed for their greatest expression by the children of God. He saves his richest gifts for his children. And as we enjoy his gift of sex, we say, by our covenant faithfulness to our spouse, that God is greater than sex, and the pleasures of sex are themselves an overflow of God's own goodness. Oh, yes! All right, wait, now you guys have told me all along in the Christian religion from day one, look, sex is not good, man. Sex, you should never do it, but when you do it, just do it with the person you love the most and for the purposes of procreation. But now you're making the opposite argument. Now you're saying, no, sex is great. Sex is... the pleasures of sex are themselves an overflow of God's own goodness. Then wait, by your own logic, shouldn't Christians be fucking nonstop? Shouldn't they be fucking premaritally? I didn't say it. You said it. And the pleasures of sex are themselves an overflow of God's own goodness. Why wouldn't you want God's own goodness splooging all over the place then? Isn't that what you'd want? Okay. Obviously, this makes no sense. But also, could you imagine, we could do the same article here, but some dumbass mullah could have written it. Would he accept the argument? Sex belongs to Muslims, because sex belongs to Allah. If it is used by those who do not believe and know the truth, it is prostituted. The pleasures of sex are meant for believers. They are designed for their greatest expression by the children of Allah. He saves his richest gift for his children. And as we enjoy his gift of sex, we say, by our covenant faithfulness to our spouse, that Allah is greater than sex, and the pleasures of sex are themselves an overflow of Allah's own goodness. When you read it that way, do you not see how, and we all have implicit biases in one way or another, it was already crazy, but did you not feel more like, this guy is, someone better watch this guy. Somebody better keep an eye out on the crazy Muslim dude who's talking about God and sex and only Muslims can have sex. And that guy, borderline a terrorist, he might do some fucked up shit. But when it's the Christian guy, again, we all have some one level or another of implicit bias that you should check and look after. It just sounds like a rambling, you know, a fucking crazy grandpa again. No, it's worse than that. The guy's a fucking lunatic. Who says this? Who argues this? You know who argues this? Brainwashed people. It always scares me when I can go through something and, like, there's no connection to reality here. It's just all, like, vomitous religious fundamentalist garbage opinion based on absolutely nothing and just, you know, trying to proclaim shit without proving it, and when somebody challenges you, no, sex is just for Christians. What about all the non-Christians who fuck? I'm not a Christian. I have sex. What does that, mean it doesn't count when I do it? Does it not feel as good for me as it does for Christians when they do it? I don't think that's true. So spare me. And my final takeaway on this, I bet a lot of money that this guy is not fucking Christians. So, okay, I don't know his situation. Perhaps he has a wife, and the wife is Christian. Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt he's doing something behind the scenes. Now, I don't know if he's probably vehemently anti-gay, but I don't know for sure. Maybe he's having sex with a gay hooker who's an atheist, which is why he feels the need to rant about how godly sex is the only kind that counts. Sex is only for Christians. So it doesn't count when I have it with that atheist hooker. I mean, Did I say that out loud? Something's going on here, guys. I guarantee you something's going on here. You don't write this unless you're struggling with something inside. You're like, God, why do I don't know why I can't help myself, but I love fucking that Muslim girl. I don't know. I got sex is just for Christians. God, why can't I live by this? I mean, it's only for Christians. Yes. Something's going on. I don't know what it is. I don't know if he's going to hookers or he's dating somebody on the side who's not Christian, but he's trying to convince somebody here, and it ain't just you. He's trying to convince that sex is just Christians. We only got to focus on Christian sex because... But it feels so good when I do it with non-Christians. I mean, I hate my life. I'm a self-hater. Why am I so stupid? All right. All right, we're going to end the show on a somewhat lighter note here. We got Justin Bieber and Taylor Swift. But it's worth it, guys. Don't worry. I know a lot of you just rolled your eyes and you were like, ah, fuck you, Kyle. Selling out to the pop culture bullshit. No, these are real stories you're about to see. Justin Bieber sat down for an interview with Complex magazine where he laid out how Christian he's become now. Really, Justin? You've become super Christian? At what point did you become Christian? When you were racing Lamborghinis and getting blown by models? Or when you were snorting Xanax and not... Come on, man! Come on! No, but he believes it, so he has some hilarious quotes here. He says, I'm the type of dude who always wants to figure it out. Science makes a lot of sense. Then I start thinking, wait, the Big Bang? For a Big Bang to create all this is more wild to think about than thinking about there being a God. Imagine putting a bunch of gold into a box, shaking up the box, and out comes a Rolex. It's so preposterous once people start saying it. Justin. Dude, stick to music, man. Look, I'm not going to lie, and this is slightly embarrassing to admit. Some of his songs are all right. They are. I mean, they're a little poppy, a little overproduced, but not bad. And he can dance like a motherfucker, too, all right? So, I'm not one of those guys like, Justin Bieber. What does that mean? You're not making an argument? What are you saying? No, sometimes catchy songs. But stick to that, bro. And you don't really need to stick to it because this is actually providing me with entertainment. So please keep talking and we'll do more segments. All right, the argument that he's making, the fallacy of passing the buck, the response to it is, you know, the argument from infinite regression. And the response to his argument is the same argument, which is, okay, according to your own logic, I mean, you can't have something really complex come out of nothing. Let's be realistic here. Right, okay, so who created God? God is way more complex than we are. Any God that has the ability to create us in all of our intricacies, clearly that God would have to be more intricate by definition if it's already supreme and so complex that it can create us in our complexity. So where did your God come from? I like how they just draw a line and they're like, okay, we're done playing the logic game now. See, they think that's a logical, well, I mean, you can't create something out of nothing. So you got to be logical here, guys. It's obviously something had to create it in the same way a watch is made by a watchmaker. Right, but then do the next step. Continue applying your same logic. If something complex needed to be created, then who the fuck created God? Because God is more complex. You don't have an answer for that. But I don't know why I would expect him to. We're talking about Justin Bieber here. So he continues. He says, I think that with Christians, they've left such a bad taste in people's mouths. You don't say. I think that people, as soon as they start hearing me say, I'm a Christian, they're like, whoa, Justin, back up. Take a step back. Also, I do not want to shove this down anyone's throat. I know you want to shove something down some people's throats. I just want to honestly live like Jesus, not be Jesus. I could never. I don't want that to come across weird. Okay, Justin, you're not like Jesus. Oh, my God, stop it. There's just a video the other day that he was on Good Morning America or some shit yelling at a cameraman for being too close to him. He's like, I'm not even going to dance anymore. It was a fucking hard life being me with my millions of dollars and models trying to blow me all the time. Justin, you're basically the opposite of Jesus. And I don't even necessarily mean that in the worst possible way, because whatever, man, you're 21 years old, you're insanely famous. If I was in that situation, I'd probably be more fucked up than you. I'd probably be way—I already would have overdosed 27 times. I'd have 83 kids. You're keeping your shit together as much as you possibly can, but don't say, I just want to be like Jesus. Or if you do say that, actually fucking do it. Do it. John Wall the other day donated $400,000 to take care of homeless kids. We're going to get to a Taylor Swift story in a second. $50,000 to help a kid with cancer. You got roughly all the money ever made ever. So go ahead, man. You know, get to doing this stuff. And I'll cover the stories. Don't get me wrong. I'll say you're a good fucking dude if you do it. So go do it. I'm not saying this as a standoffish kind of thing. I'm trying to help you out. If you say you want to be like Jesus, motherfucker, go ahead. Be like Jesus. And finally, I'll leave you with the best quote. Like I said, you don't need to go to church to be a Christian. If you go to Taco Bell, that doesn't make you a taco. You don't need to go to church to be a Christian. If you go to Taco Bell, that doesn't make you a taco. I'm not even going to try to make sense of that one. You try. All right. Next. And final story, Taylor Swift. So Taylor Swift has done some great charity work in the past. She often responds to fans, and she recently helped pay off somebody's student loan debt, and now she's helping with medical bills. And if I'm not mistaken, she actually helped with somebody else's medical bills recently, and today Huffington Post reports the following, quote, she donated $50,000 to a 13-month-old baby who was just diagnosed with cancer. The little guy, Aiden, is the nephew of one of Swift's backup dancers, Kim Toshi Davidson. Swift's donation was more than double the $20,000 goal set by Aiden's family and was no doubt appreciated by the family. According to the page, Aiden's mother, Lindsay, was let go from her job since she had to be by his side at the hospital for the past few weeks. So, I mean, you want to talk about a messed up situation. Mother lost her job. The family clearly is struggling for money on some level. And Taylor Swift steps in and says, okay, $50,000, here you go. They were asking for $20,000. She's like, no, $50,000, here. Now, yet again, I mean, just like we did with the John Wall story the other day, he gave $400,000 to help homeless kids. I mean, the main takeaway here has to be just a good person. I mean, Taylor Swift's actions show that she gives a shit about people. And she can prioritize, and she has everything in order, and she realizes that it's not easy for people out there, man. And sometimes people run into situations that are so fucked up. Yet again, I hate to make the same point I made in the John Wall story, but it is the takeaway. We shouldn't have to rely on Taylor Swift and other rich people or other celebrities or other kind people to step up and take care of problem X, Y, or Z, which should, in a civilized society, be off the table already. Guys, just to give one example here, we spent trillions of dollars on the war in Iraq, a war we shouldn't have done in the first place. Why would we not have taken that money, instead of doing the war, and just put it towards universal health care for everybody, Medicare for everybody? So you get sick, you get help, you don't pay a penny because it comes out of your taxes, and zero people go bankrupt because of medical bills. Right now, we live in a country where one of the top causes of bankruptcy is medical bills. That's ridiculous. That means our priorities are all fucked up. Stop with the corporate welfare. Stop with the war. Stop with spending money on things that nobody would prioritize rationally. And start putting money towards education. Start putting money towards health care. And let's make it so we don't have to rely on the kindness of celebrities or rich people so that you don't go bankrupt when your kid gets cancer. I don't think that's that much to ask. All right, guys, I love you. I'll see you tomorrow. Peace. Mwah.